Want to advertise your business in a cost-effective way? It's time to give podcast advertising a try. Research shows a high rate of podcast listeners made a purchase as a result of an ad they heard on a podcast. Visit podbean.com/brands to launch a cost-effective podcast advertising campaign in minutes. That's podbean.com/brands.
Welcome to Yolitics, the home of cold beer and hot takes on Texas politics.
All right, Jason, I'm doing something never done before this year. I'm doing dry January.
Are you right?
I am.
What inspired that?
just to see if I could do it. And here we are 10, 11 days in, and I've done it. So, you know what I've noticed, though? And, you know, I would have, you know, a glass of wine at night, a beer with you, stuff like that. I don't think I have that much to drink. But, like, within the first 3 or 4 days, I lost 5 pounds. And I'm thinking,
wow,
I love
really?
This. Secondly, everything's looking great, except I can't sleep at night.
So wait a minute. You don't think you actually have that much to drink,
right?
But in 3 to 4 days, you lost 5 pounds and now you can't sleep at
what's
night.
My body
maybe
telling
you
me?
Were having,
yeah, what's my body telling
maybe
me?
Maybe you were having more than you thought you were having.
That's
what that tells
that's
me.
That's what I'm afraid of. That's really what I'm afraid of. So, but
well, you're one of many, though, who has jumped on this dry January thing. I'm dry today because I am at work and in the office today.
That's
and
never stopped you before, though, man.
You are correct about that. So maybe I'm doing dry January too, just subconsciously. But yeah, I'm one of these people coming into the office still all of these months in. And a lot of folks have been trying to do that. And, you know, we're talking about that today because we just keep on hearing about all of these different services that are being affected by this Omicron variant, especially because it's just spreading like wildfire and it's taking out staffs at a lot of places. Yeah. And it has probably impacted you in some way by now.
Yeah, and I tweeted the other day about Dallas County. I think it was Thursday or Friday about Dallas County having its highest daily COVID positive cases in the history of the pandemic. I want to say it's like 5,000 or 6,000, something like that. It topped the previous number. And, you know, those used to get a lot of retweets, but really not much now. But there was one person, a former mayor in North Texas, and the mayor just put on there simply, relax, like, take it easy, Whiteley, take it easy on this. I don't respond to things like that. But,
right.
You know, in one sense, yeah, people are not going to the hospitals as much, which is fantastic for everybody. But they're still sick, and employers are saying, don't come in if you're sick. We don't want to shut down the entire operation. So I get up this morning, I'm probably like everybody, I don't know, and I look at my phone, a bunch of stuff on there, and a push alert from WFAA shows up, and it says that Plano ISD in North Texas and Garland ISD in North Texas say they don't have enough bus drivers. Might want to drive your kids to school if you want your kids to show up in class today, which is phenomenal to me. And it goes along with everything I'm hearing, too. You know, Dallas had some issues with its, I think, firefighters in the past few weeks. There are all types of shortages everywhere.
Yeah, we saw this in Austin as well. Some headlines coming out of there of the same sort of thing. And I think that's where it starts to get most of us, Jason. You know, I mean, my trash took, you know, a day or so longer than usual to be picked up. I just left the bin out there a little bit longer. That's not a big deal. You know, if you're traveling, yeah, that TSA line might be a little bit longer. Maybe your flight gets delayed or canceled. But when it really starts to matter is when you start talking about, you know, police and fire and EMS. You know, maybe you need an ambulance. And then you really start thinking about this and you're hoping that they've got enough staff. And in many cases across the country right now and here across this state, they don't have enough staff and they're having to really pull some maneuvers to keep staffing going. And in some cases, they're having to park some of these emergency vehicles as well. And so the first person we want to get on the line here with us is Haley Stewart. So she is the North Texas Operations Manager manager at Acadian, which is an ambulance service. It's a contract service. Haley, thanks for being with us today. We know that you all have really been dealing with some challenges, like so many of these services across Texas.
COVID has presented a really large amount of challenges as it's progressed and it's kind of gone through waves. We're seeing a national shortage in EMTs and paramedics right now. It's not just Acadian. You're seeing it just across the country, across our service areas. But then you add in on top of that, this variant that we're currently dealing with in North Texas really just seems to be taking out staff members left and right. During the height of the pandemic in the first and second wave, we really did a good job of, you know, enforcing policy, and our employees did a really good job of PPE, and they're still doing that. But then the average amount of employees out on any given day was 2 to 3 with COVID positive. Right now we're seeing 5 to 10 out a day, COVID positive, and it's not from them laxing on the masks. It's just this variant is so contagious. It is crippling the staffing situation. So I absolutely, when it's busy and when we have people calling in, I jump on to help the crews. That's what we do. We're part of the team. So we empty out the office and we'll be out there running calls with them.
So 5 to 10 out a day is a lot of people. Are you guys having to park any ambulances because you can't physically staff them?
Yes. So we try to avoid that as much as humanly possible, because obviously customer service and our contracted facilities take top priority. But in the worst of it, there was a time period where we were having to down like 4 to 6 a day. Right now, because we've hired a few more people, we've been able to get to where it's like 1 to 2 a day. But yes, we absolutely have had to make sure that we consolidate and do what we can. And we'll do creative things like elongate shifts and stuff like that. But then you run into employee fatigue, and we're all about safety. So we have a cap on how much they can work. We have mandatory downtime, stuff like that.
Well, Haley, let me ask you that. The employee fatigue, from what I was reading, is one of the things that's causing so many people to walk away from, you know, the job of being a paramedic across the country. That's kind of a fine line to walk, because you need to keep these ambulances running, but you don't want to drive people away from the job on the other hand, right?
We have never been a company that has ever mandated overtime. We don't believe in it. Every other private service that I am aware of does mandate overtime. We do it. If you want to do it, that's great, but we don't force it. But yeah, no, you absolutely have to toe that line. And that's why we have policy in place saying, you know, you can't work more than 24 hours if you're on a 12-hour truck, or more than 36 hours on a 24-hour truck, because the call volume differentiates from a 12 to 24-hour shift. And then you also, if you're going to do shifts like that, you have to have an approval at a higher level to make sure that, you know, everyone's on the same page, that we're enforcing those mandatory breaks and stuff like that.
Just because we've seen so many people, Haley, walking off the job in this profession and in other ones across the country, how much of your day is spent dealing with employee morale and trying to put out that nasty fire of, you know, COVID fatigue among the workers there?
That is what we eat, breathe, and sleep right now, is employee morale, employee retention, making sure they feel supported. We are lucky enough at Acadian that we have an internal EAP, so we can, I try to stay away from mandating it, because, you know, counseling and talking to people really only works if you want it to work. But, that is an option, as well as just, you know,
for people who aren't lucky enough to have one of those, it's an employee assistance program.
Yes. Yes. Mm. And then we also make sure at any given time there's available resources for local therapists and stuff like that as well, that accept our insurance. But it's a lot of meetings daily. It's a lot of phone calls. It's texts. It's making sure that you're staying positive, that you're trying to, you know, do little things, whether, like right now we're buying food for the crews pretty regularly, making sure there's donuts at the station, making sure we're cooking for them when we can. If we're not giving them hot meals, giving them a gift card so that they can, you know, catch Whataburger on the way to a call, something like that. But really just making sure that they know we know they're tired. We appreciate everything they're doing, and we're here to walk them through anything they need or any help they need.
And you mentioned, you know, worst case scenario, Haley, you guys might have to park trucks if you just don't have the staff to do it. But does that mean that patients are backing up at some of your contracted hospitals?
It can. Yeah. So we have our major contracts up here, and we obviously have to make sure that they take top priority. A lot of times the way the private ambulance service works is multiple hospitals will have like multiple contracts, right? But we're not necessarily their primary contract. So it ends up pushing them back a little bit. But on top of just even outside of staffing, there's such an extended time at hospitals right now in the waiting room. So when we're dropping off a patient at the ER, let's say for an emergency patient, that ambulance is sometimes stuck on the wall with their stretcher for an hour and a half to 2 hours, waiting for an ER bed to be available. And then you factor in if it's a COVID transport or a suspected COVID transport, we're having to down that truck for an additional 20 to 30 minutes for decon after the call to make sure that the ambulance is ready for the next one. So there's a lot of factors that play into it on top of just downing the trucks. It takes, you know, pre-COVID, the average call in North Texas took like an hour and 30 minutes, hour and 45 minutes. Now we're looking at 2 to 2.5 hours because of those times.
Wow. And you mentioned just how much more time it takes if it is a COVID patient or a suspected COVID patient in the back of that ambulance. Are you seeing an extraordinary number of those these days? Because I think that really speaks to this. Are you seeing a huge uptick in the number of COVID calls?
Yes. Yes. Not only for like emergency or going to the ER transports, but also just discharges back to nursing homes, discharges home. But, you know, certain nursing homes don't take COVID patients and some do. And there's a lot of little nuances that people don't think about with that kind of stuff. But yes, absolutely.
You mentioned the shortage of EMTs. Is that just a two-part question here for you? Is that recent since COVID began back in 2020, or has that been going on for a while? And I bring that up, Haley, because you guys are even offering an accelerated program for people to come and is it a certification? Forgive me for not knowing this, but to you know, become an EMT. The deadline for that's the 24th of January, and you're even paying these students while that's going on. Will you talk a little bit about that and then how long the shortage has been going on?
Sure. So there was a national shortage prior to the pandemic. We did a good job in North Texas, specifically kind of holding our own before that. What we saw when the pandemic hit was similar to back in the 80s when HIV and AIDS kind of came to light at first and a lot of people left healthcare. There was just a lot of fear of the unknown. There's a lot of, you know, all they saw when they would turn on the news or look at social media was the different areas of our country and around the world that were struggling with high death toll rates. And, you know, just a lot of fear behind that, right? So we saw a lot of people kind of exit healthcare in general. What we also saw was there were a lot of like hospitals, but also just like special projects, right, that had that COVID funding so they could go test patients for COVID in a clinic and make upwards of $25 an hour just to test people all day. They weren't being an EMT, but they were getting paid high dollar amounts to do those things. We are offering an accelerated EMT class. So we actually offered something similar back in October and had a really great success with that. So there's a step below EMT called ECA, which is basically you're going to be driving around the EMT. The EMT runs the calls, but you are trained in CPR, advanced first aid, that kind of thing. With that class, we actually were able to recruit 17 into it and all 17 passed. Wow. It was a 2-week program. So we paid them while they were in class. We paid for their national certification and their state to get them on the road. And that has helped substantially. So now we're doing it again, but we're doing the EMT level just because an EMT is a little more versatile in what you can use them for. So that class starts on January 24th. It's a 7-week, Monday through Friday, 8 to 6. They come to our station, and we have a partnership with the School of EMS up here. So they come in, they teach the students. It's 7 weeks, you know, every day. And then after that, they do their clinicals. They'll take their national registry, and then they'll be good to go, released on the street. So, but we
7 weeks. How does that compare to normal?
So it's the same amount of class time. It's just super condensed, right? Mm. So normally in EMT class, what we see is it's about 3 months long, and you go on like Tuesdays and Thursdays from like 6 to 10 is a typical schedule that we see. Mm-hmm. So it's the same amount of hours, just super condensed to get it all done at once.
Let me ask you one other question that we're trying to get a gauge on. You guys are around a lot of hospitals, a lot of medical professionals all the time, including yourselves too. What are y'all hearing as far as when this might peak?
I think we're kind of in the peak right now from what I hear. As far as this variant goes, it doesn't seem to last very long. And part of it's the vaccine, part of it's the variant, but the symptoms aren't as extreme. So like what we're seeing with the new CDC guidance of the 5 days, right? So all of our employees are vaccinated. We're in compliance with that stuff, but they really are only having symptoms for 2 or 3 days, which does help a lot. But we've already seen, I would say this week, it's kind of at its peak. It seems to have stabilized though. And so I'm hoping within the next 2 to 3 weeks, we'll see it come down again. We kind of expected a big uptick with this, with the holidays though.
Haley, I have one more for you too. I would imagine that you probably speak to counterparts in other, you know, parts of the state and the country, maybe for that matter. Your service is not the only one, obviously, dealing with staffing issues right now and finding enough EMTs to man these ambulances, and in some cases having to park these ambulances. What are you hearing and what are you seeing regarding response times? You know, because I think to most of us, that's what we, you know, really think about if we call for an ambulance. You know, is that response time being affected right now because of all this?
Sure. So it's going to, it really depends. The easy answer is yes, it is affected by this. Emergencies are always going to take priority over like what we would call like a scheduled call, right? So a discharge from a hospital, that kind of thing. I know the numbers I saw region wide, not Acadian specific, was for hospitals to get a patient out of the ER that's like at the BLS level, right? So an EMT level call is like 3 to 4 hours right now. And then for an ALS, it's typical, which is going to be like cardiac monitoring. There's drugs on board, something like that. That's a little more advanced practice. That's taking 1 to 2 hours, which those are very high numbers. To put it in perspective, a lot of our ALS contracts, for example, our response time is supposed to be like 30 minutes to an hour, depending on the facility. As far as 911 calls, we do have 911 in Siegelville, Texas. It really hasn't affected that too much, but we also have trucks dedicated to that system, so it's a little different.
Woo! Haley, thanks so much for the time. I hope really we are approaching this peak, if not already at it, but we appreciate you taking some time, because I know you might have to hop on an ambulance yourself and get out there and help the crews.
Absolutely.
So it's Haley Stewart there, the North Texas Operations Manager for Acadian. And, you know, Jason, she's not just sitting in the office, you know, overseeing that operation. She's actually been out there on the rig with the crews in recent weeks, because it's every hand on deck. You know, it's everybody's got to get in there and switch hats.
Yeah. And, you know, for the longest time, I know what private ambulances do, but I didn't really fully appreciate it until when I was living in Houston, 15 years ago. And had to go to a local hospital in the suburb because I had this abdominal pain. Turned out to be gallbladder. And the hospital said, we can't do surgery here, but we got to throw you in an ambulance and take you up Highway 59, the Southwest Freeway, to a big hospital. And, you know, they don't call out city ambulances for those transfers. So they threw me in the back of a private ambulance, and those folks took great care of me and took me up the road. So that's the importance of these private ambulances. It is a cog in the wheel that is necessary. And that's just, you know, one thing we've heard about. If you've been traveling lately, you've probably you've seen issues with Southwest Airlines, with American Airlines. They're having the same issues of actually having people who can physically work. So let's zoom out for a moment here get a bigger picture idea of what's happening. We have on the phone with us here Brandon Bennett. He is technically the code compliance director at the city of Fort Worth, but he was telling us right before we got him on here that he does a number of different things. Like all of us, he wears a lot of hats. In fact, I believe he said that he's kind of the junk drawer department. He does a little bit of everything there in Fort Worth.
And right now, one of the many things that you do is that you're the COVID-19 incident commander. Talk a little bit about what we're seeing these days in Fort Worth, and we might as well be, you know, fill that blank in with any major city here in Texas. What are you all going through as far as COVID goes right now? I know you all have really been ramping up the testing sites.
Oh, absolutely. And of course, nationally, testing is probably in the highest demand that we've seen since the beginning of the pandemic. And that's because this current variant is so contagious that we are seeing a larger segment of the population that is ill. The warmer weather and the outdoor activities in the winter that we don't normally see has also increased allergy type symptoms. So people are not sure if they're sick or it's allergies. And they're doing exactly what we've asked them to do. And that's to get tested to confirm. And I'll tell you this last week, I spent some time in one of the testing sites, and about half the people that came back positive, maybe a little less than half, came back positive. They didn't have really bad symptoms. And in fact, many of them said, it's just allergies, but I wanted to double check for the holidays. And so it's a good thing that they did. They were able to stay away from parents and grandparents and others that were susceptible to the virus.
So people's symptoms aren't that bad here, Brandon, but employers still don't want folks showing up at work. And the city, I'm sure, is one of those. So tell us how that's impacting things from code compliance to EMS to City Hall.
I think that's one of the biggest challenges that early on, you know, we got 2 years ago, we would tell employees, hey, if you're not feeling well, don't come to work. And there was a much higher compliance rate. And what happens is you get pandemic fatigue that we can't continue to operate as an organization, nor can private industry. If every time somebody gets a runny nose, they stay at home, it just won't work. And in fact, we see that globally right now with the supply chain issues, that a lot of that is tied to early decisions in the pandemic where factories shut down and raw product was not produced for manufacturing to take use of, so forth and so on. And so we continue to see folks that come to the workplace sick, maybe a little less over the last week or so with more people getting sick. It's raised the attention and alertness of folks. But nonetheless, people are still coming to work. And one of the things that we've done for police and fire and here at the Joint Emergency Operations Center is every day when folks arrive for work, we offer them a quick test. A lot of people know that as the Bionex Now test. Right. There's different types of those available because we want to make sure that we aren't bringing staff into the workplace that are ill. They're going to make a greater segment of the workplace ill because we're already seeing a number of sick folks that aren't able to come to work.
Well, Brandon, how many are out right now, just roughly at you know, across the city or in your department specifically at Code Compliance? And how's that impacting the services you provide?
So the impact to the public for critical services is negligible at this point, that we're still meeting all of our police and fire and EMS response times. What happens is we have plans for this. So you can see behind me right now, the Joint Emergency Operations Center is usually full of people along with other public service locations. Because of the spread of this particular variant, what we've done is we've got more people working from home, doing less travel. where they're less likely to get sick. And then the other is for those that do get sick, we were very quick to adopt the new guidelines from the CDC. And I think we're going to see a trend in those recommendations where we used to have a strict isolation policy of 10 days. Now it's 5 days, test negative, wear a mask for 5 days and back to work. Now, you know, future variants may change that guidance and everybody should be ready for it. But right now we should really consider that because the most transmissibility or the highest risk for transmissibility occurs in that first couple of days before people are symptomatic into about 3 or 4 days afterwards.
Yeah, and if you sit people out for 5 days and then bring them back to work, you don't have as many problems with those staffing issues that you were having, you know, when you're isolating people for 10 days.
Correct. And what we do is that not every position is face-to-face public. And so for those people that do come back and they wear a mask, we can put them into support roles. And then the people that were in support roles, we can then reallocate them onto a fire engine or into a police car or helping with dispatch or taking 911 calls.
So you're not the only one wearing a lot of hats these days. Are you seeing that with, you know, employees there in city government where people are doing jobs that they didn't necessarily always do?
Absolutely. You know, it's just across the board, everything right now. During the ice storm, remember, we were short on resources, but we also had COVID and a lot of folks that were sick. So we had parks employees that we reallocated because people weren't going to the parks to work with our water department to fix the water mains. So we're doing the same thing right now, particularly at our vaccination and our testing sites, we can train folks fairly quickly, get them up to speed, and then start rotating folks in. We see a fatigue like the hospitals, but I don't want to overstate that. Certainly the hospitals are facing it much greater than we are. And that's one of the benefits of having a joint emergency operations center is, you know, we can kind of have a predictability and then allocate resources or prepare the allocation of resources based on what we're seeing. So when people start calling for an ambulance because they're feeling sick, right? That's an early warning that people are going to start overloading the emergency rooms. And then, of course, the more people that get tested, the more positive people that there's going to be. And then that other impact on resources, along with right now, particularly with the children, is respiratory illness. We've seen an uptick in the demand for hospital beds. There are still beds available, ICU and otherwise, but it's something we want to continue to watch and forecast and then make allocation changes so that everybody gets taken care of.
So Brandon, we woke up this morning to some alerts from WFAA saying, hey parents, if you're in Garland ISD or in Plano ISD in North Texas, might want to take your kids to school because we don't have enough school bus drivers in some of these places. Are you guys seeing any issues at all, like in animal control or in garbage pickup, like we've heard in other cities where there just aren't enough folks to physically go out and do the jobs right now?
Yeah, garbage pickup is a challenging one, both with the holidays because there was more waste. People were putting it out. So what we're having to do is work additional hours. We do things in Fort Worth by contract, and our contractors right now, where they used to finish up at 5 to 6 o'clock in the evening, we have trucks that are out till 9 in the evening. And so it's one of the ways in which we can still get it picked up, but it's not sustainable. You know, that you can't have a limited number of drivers, whether it be for school buses, garbage trucks, delivery trucks, things like that. And again, that's one of the reasons why we have the guidance from the CDC. So with the drivers for waste management, they isolate for 5 days and then they can get back in the truck. They have very little public contact, get them back to work and give the other drivers some relief.
That's good to know, though. So if you get home and your garbage hasn't been picked up yet, don't roll that bin back in just yet. They didn't miss you. You might leave it out there a little while longer. It sounds like, Brandon, you are putting out all of these different fires that keep popping up, but you never really know where the next one's going to pop up.
And that's part of the predictability. We don't, but we're ready. And so I'm trying to think of one here in the last couple of weeks that's been very interesting. Oh, so one of the ones we got right now is there are plenty of testing resources, but there are some that are more popular than others. And so we have a couple of locations here in the city where folks are backing up major arterials waiting to go to get tested when a block or two down the road, there's another testing facility that has capacity and would not create that traffic jam. So we have staff out this morning that are normally down here that are out working on traffic management plans, something that they don't normally do, so that we can route traffic better to the testing sites and then to other testing sites in the area. And then, of course, putting out public information through the media and elsewhere to let folks know if you go to one that's backed up, pick another one. There's plenty of them out there.
And Brendan, it does sound like all hands on deck there in Fort Worth and everywhere for that matter right now, especially, private or municipal or anywhere else. You mentioned the vaccine and testing sites earlier. Who is manning those?
So it's a collaboration, right? Which is really cool. That's the benefit of something that I get to see every day is we've got Tarrant County, who does the lab work for some of the quick tests that we need, the PCR quick tests. They work with a private contractor, as we do also. We hire temporary employees to work at our testing facilities. One of the things that we did early on is we moved from the nasal test to saliva tests. So at our testing sites, you don't have to have a nurse or a paramedic. Folks deposit their saliva in a little tube, and then we mail that every night overnight to our lab on the East Coast and get the results back in about 24 hours. The other cool thing about the saliva tests is we can just distribute these across all city departments. We can hand them out to nursing homes, to homeless shelters, because it doesn't require a medical tech to actually do the test. And it's pretty straightforward how you do it. We can do high volumes and get fast results.
Wow, that's very impressive. So no nose tickling or any of that. Were you guys ahead of the curve on being able to get that supply there? That sounds kind of envious.
We've been at it for about 9 to 12 months now. We were, I think, the second large city in America to actually adopt the saliva. And we did it because we were predicting that we would have this draw on resources. It wasn't sustainable. You can't use all of your firefighters, all your police officers, and all your public health people to do their current job and do this extra pandemic job over time. So we found ways to where the public can help us do their own tests.
Everything I'm reading, Brandon, says this Omicron really peaks in the U.S. and maybe in Texas in the next 4 to 6 weeks. I don't know if you have any updated numbers from that. But does this get worse before it gets better for y'all?
Yeah. You know, when we look at, and we've been pretty good about our predictions, we have not been, you know, like the world's falling apart or everything's going to be okay. I think we've been pretty good at being that middle of the road. And what we're seeing working with UT Southwestern and their researchers and UNT Health Sciences and others, we're making a prediction just like we're seeing nationally, maybe more on the 4 week side than the 4 to 6 week side. We do anticipate, just like we would see with the seasonal flu, that when children go back to school, and they're in close proximity indoors, that we will see an uptick in the spread, both in the school-age children and then, of course, into the adult population.
Is there something different about Tarrant County? I was just looking at the New York Times tracker tool for vaccinations, and out of all the major counties in Texas, Tarrant had the lowest vaccination rate. What is it? What's going on there?
So what you have, when you look at vaccination rate, you're looking at a number of the total population and the number of that population that's vaccinated. So while there are other counties in Texas that are less vaccinated, they also have less people. And so what you have is the more urban the environment, the higher the vaccination rate you're going to have. And so where you have places like Dallas County that is surrounded by all of these cities and somewhat landlocked, in Tarrant County, we have a lot more rural area and a lot more rural counties around us. And that continues to be a challenge, your city dweller versus your urban folks, and the different ideologies that of course come to play that we see every day on social media and in the news. So from our standpoint, we don't see it as that we're failing at something. We see it as it's more of a challenge. And I think that the CDC recommendation for 5 days and then 5 days in a mask and some of the other things that'll probably come from this, that may spark some conversations and some people coming more towards the middle instead of being totally against vaccinations or totally for vaccinations, that, that hopefully these conversations will bring us to the middle to say, you know, it's okay that I might disagree with you on these issues, but I'm still going to get a vaccination because I realize that's the best for me or my family. On the other side, right, that a better understanding that some folks, for medical reasons, religious reasons, or just personal reasons, are going to say, I'm not going to get vaccinated. And that doesn't make them horrible people, right? What we just ask from public health is that don't make your decision on your own research, because your own research is generally speaking with friends and Googling. Make a decision talking to your own healthcare provider, and make sure that you are doing what's right for you and your family.
Brandon, before we let you go, you mentioned earlier that you're kind of sitting in the incident command center. It's kind of like it is a command center. A lot of, you know, lights, a lot of computer monitors behind you there trying to describe this for our listeners. You're dressed up in a suit. Wheeler and I rarely wear suits for podcasts. You have a mustache that would make most people at the fire department jealous. But
it's it's my COVID mustache. So as soon as this is over, I get to shave this darn thing.
It might be hanging way down by then. But give us an idea. I mean, it sounds like you have things really kind of, you know, respectfully, you have them kind of taped together, making sure that the city continues to run there. What's your schedule for the rest of the day? My last question for you, what's your schedule for the rest of the day, and how long are your days right now?
Yeah. So our days are long, but they're very rewarding. And so throughout the day, we will talk with university researchers. We'll get updates from them. The epidemiologists, we'll look at the prediction models. Not today, but over the next couple of days, we will have telephone calls with hospital CEOs. Will have conversations with emergency managers. Every hospital and hospital system has an emergency manager who is watching their staffing and their intake. And one of the problems that we're looking at right now is we still have too many people showing up at EDARs to get tested. So we're working with those folks and our public works department, see if we can put some traffic signs up or some readable, those big ones that say road closed. Right. Maybe we can get some of those up that say, you know, go to these places for testing. Don't go to the ER. I can tell you one of the unique things is, and I would invite any of you or all of you or anybody else to spend some time looking at what we look at. And what you find is that there's a lot of people working behind the scenes, from our EMS, police, fire, hospitals, nursing homes, homeless shelters, volunteers, United Way, the list goes on and on, that we're able to pull this off every day because of so many people working together.
Well, it sounds like you all really have your thumb on the situation there in Tarrant County and in Fort Worth. And I don't know where you found the time to squeeze us in, but thank you for taking the time to give us a good idea of what's going on behind the scenes there. Brandon Bennett, the Code Compliance Director and Chief Health Officer in the city of Fort Worth, along with so many other things, that you're considered the leader of the junk drawer department, as you say.
That's right.
pretty much everything falls into your purview.
Yep.
Brandon, thank you for taking the time with us.
Yep, thank you.
So you know what? I asked both of them the same question about the peak on this, Wheeler, because I'm, you know, who doesn't want it to be over with? Right. I thought it was interesting that, you know, Brandon just told us there a moment ago that he thinks that, you know, we're 4 to 6 weeks away, 4 weeks away, I believe is what he said. New York Times reporting 4 to 6 weeks. And Haley actually kind of living this with her crews around hospital folks all the time, saying they think it, you know, we might be in it now. It might last for 4 weeks, but we might be in it right now.
Oh, and you know, maybe that's optimistic. We don't know. I want to be on Team Haley there and just hope that we're in the worst of it now and that it's all downhill from here. We'll see how that goes, though, as the weeks unfold here. But you do wonder in some of these cases how much more some of these different institutions can take. Yeah. You know, I mean, they're dealing with, you know, burnout and fatigue and you know, they've been through wave after wave after wave of this. And it's not slowing down. It's sped up for them here in this case, those people really could use a break.
Yeah, they could. And, you know, as we let you guys go in this podcast, you know, I just ask you to be patient. I'm the second one. Wheeler's the first one to lose his patience. I thought that I had like the world record for like patience losing. Wheeler easily tops me. I stand in awe.
No. That was before dry January, though. You might lose it a lot faster now.
Maybe so. But at the end of
not
the,
as mellow.
Yeah, right. Maybe the beer is what mellows me out of town. Have some patience. If you're flying somewhere, if you're at a place with a long line, I know it's tough. I mean,
if your trash hasn't been picked up right on time, be patient. It's the world we're in right now. Yeah. If you're, you know, if Amazon can't get that, you know, certain something to you overnight like they used to be able to, it's all the same.
It is the same. Be patient, stay healthy, and we hope that you can join us again next week.